Morning, everybody. Please be seated. Our first case this morning is case number 56682, Saguaro Power v. Public Utilities Commission. We have Justice Gibbons and I are here in Carson City. Justice Pickering is in Las Vegas at the Regional Justice Center. Justice Pickering, did you want to explain why you're at the Regional Justice Center?
Yes, thank you, Justice Cherry. Can everyone hear me okay up there?
Yes.
I apologize for not being there in person. My long-term law colleague, Cam Fernbach, is being sworn in as a U.S. Magistrate Judge today, and that swearing-in is taking place at 3 here in Las Vegas. And he and I actually embarked us together at Lionel Sawyer many, many years ago, and I wanted to be there very much for his investiture. Originally, I thought I could manage the airplane travel so that we would conclude this morning's arguments, and then I would be able to attend that. But with the weather up in Reno, I would have had to have had perfect timing on all flights and all connections and all traffic. So I asked Presiding Justice Cherry if it would be acceptable if I participated from Las Vegas by video so that I could both be in this morning's arguments and attend Cam's swearing in. And I appreciate very much the opportunity and the accommodation. So thank you, Justice Cherry and Justice Gibbons and litigants.
Thank you, Justice Pickering. For the appellant, we have Mr. Carlson. For the respondents, we have Ms. Penrose Levig and Mr. Saunders. Mr. Carlson, you ready to proceed?
Yes, Your Honor. Good morning. May it please the court. My name is Severin Carlson, and I represent the appellant Saguaro Power Company. I would like to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal.
Certainly.
The essence of this case is about notice, a requirement of due process so that an interested person is made aware of his legally protected interests that may be adversely affected by an administrative action. First, Saguaro requests that this court apply its prior decision in Public Service Commission versus Southwest Gas 99 Nevada 268 from 1983 by reversing the district court's order, which should have found that the commission's actions with respect to Southwest's 2005 and 2006 deferred energy filings went beyond the notices issued in those filings. Second, Saguaro requests that this court make a determination as to the standard by which the commission must issue an amended notice. This court should take guidance from Nevada Administrative Code, Chapter 703, Section 160. Subsection E, which provides that public notice must be published prominently so that it is reasonably calculated to notify affected persons. As you know, Saguaro is a generator and seller of electric power in southern Nevada, and in the course of its operations, it uses a large volume of natural gas. Saguaro is a transportation customer of Southwest, one of 58 in Southwest Southern Nevada Division. As a transportation customer, Saguaro only utilizes the pipeline system of Southwest Gas. It purchases no natural gas, no commodity from Southwest. Part of the money, or for the use of the transportation line, Southwest pays for that, plus it also pays what's called a shrinkage rate for gas that's lost over the line. On average, prior to 2005, Saguaro paid about $120,000 per year in shrinkage as a transportation customer. In 2005, Southwest filed an annual deferred energy adjustment filing with the commission. Based upon the contents of the application, the commission issued its notice and that Southwest was requesting no change to the shrinkage rate at that time. Accordingly, the notice for the 2005 case was completely silent as to the change in the methodology and does not contain the term shrinkage rate. The initial notice from 2005 is in the Joint Appendix, Volume 3, at pages 535 to 540. During the course of proceedings, however, in the 2005 case, as a part of its intervener testimony, Commission staff requested a change in the shrinkage rate calculation methodology. This requested change was never in the public notice in 2005. Because Southwest had never considered it, never requested it, and Commission staff had only requested it after notice had been issued and long after proceedings had commenced. Commission staff requested a change in the shrinkage rate calculation methodology that they believed would result in a 10% increase in the shrinkage rate to Saguaro. Ultimately, the commission adopted staff's erroneous calculation. They thought it was going to be 10%, but there was actually a calculation error that would result in a tenfold increase to Saguaro in the shrinkage rate that it pays. The commission should have told staff that it was not going to address its requested change in the methodology rate. The commission, as the administrative gatekeeper, should have told staff that needs to be presented in another docket where sufficient notice can be given that the shrinkage rate calculation methodology is going to be addressed, that the 2005 case was only dealing with Southwest's request with respect to its energy accounting and the base rate, which don't apply to Saguaro as a transportation customer. Regardless, in 2005, the commission adopted staff's requested change with the understanding that it was a 10% increase and without knowledge that there was a calculation error that would result in a tenfold increase to Saguaro. That tenfold increase would result in Saguaro paying close to $1 million a year in shrinkage rather than $100,000 a year in shrinkage, or a little over 100 in shrinkage. Then in 2006, Southwest filed another deferred energy filing case with the tenfold increase rates proposed. The application referenced that, but the application did not reference the mistake, the revised rate, the change in methodology, or the tenfold increase. And the notice, the initial notice in 2006, was completely silent as to all of these matters. That notice, again, found in Volume 1 of the Joint Appendix, pages 109 through 111, only referenced the DEAA and the BTER, which again are not applicable to Saguaro as a transportation customer. Now, the Commission is going to take the position that the DEAA and the BTER do contemplate some shrinkage. And they do, with respect to commodity customers. But as the record reflects, Saguaro is not a commodity customer. It only pays to use the pipeline to transport natural gas that it purchases from third parties, not from Southwest. After issuing the initial notice in 2000.
Excuse me, Council. Council, I have a question on the predicate point you're making, which is that the notice was inadequate to your client of the 05 and 06 proceedings. That issue was not determined at the administrative agency level, correct?
Correct. Saguaro presented evidence, including the notices from 2005 and 2006. It had an opportunity to examine staff members about the calculation error from 2005, but that was presented to the commission that the notices were inadequate in 2005 and 2006. The commission ultimately requested the parties to brief the concept of retroactive rate making and the filed rate doctrine. And the commission ultimately made a legal conclusion, which is subject to de novo review by the district court and this court, that granting Saguaro a refund would violate the filed rate doctrine and would result in retroactive rate making.
So you're asking us to do what here? To reverse and remand back to the agency to go beyond its reliance on the filed rate doctrine and address the sufficiency of the notice? Is that the relief you seek?
We believe that this court should reverse the district court's decision that the record is clear that the 2005 and 2006 notices are legally insufficient, and therefore the matter should be remanded to the commission for a determination as to what refund Saguaro is entitled to.
But you consider the notice issue ripe for determination at the judicial level, notwithstanding the fact that the sole basis for avoiding it by the agency was filed rate doctrine?
Correct. Well, the agency has continued to take the position that they believe the 2005 and 2006 notices are legally sufficient and that any refund would result in retroactive rate making. So they've made two legal conclusions, essentially, one with respect to notice, even though their orders don't explicitly second on the refund itself.
Was there any argument at any point in this proceeding that the 2005 and 2006 went beyond an individual rate case to reach almost regulation making by the agency that would be subject to 233B?
If I understand your question correctly, Justice Pickering, the 2005 case changed the shrinkage rate calculation methodology dramatically. So it would be rate making. Historically, there are a number of transportation customers, and then there are customers like you and me who just take natural gas to heat our homes. Historically, the way that it worked prior to 2005 is that shrinkage rate, there were some transportation customers that were exempt from paying it, and there were some like Saguaro. The exempt customers, their share of the shrinkage rate prior to 2005 was paid for by the non-exempt transportation customers and regular customers of Southwest Gas. In 2005, Commission staff proposed to change that to make regular customers not pay for that share from exempt customers and to solely put it on the backs of non-exempt transportation customers. So this was a radical change in terms of rate design.
Okay, thank you.
Again, going back to the 2006 case, the initial notice in that case contained no reference to the shrinkage rate. And what's telling is the amended notice, for the first time in 2005 and in 2006, uses the language shrinkage rate and transportation customer. Now, and then it provided the rate. But the notice did not provide any information as to the change in methodology from 2005, and it did not provide any information as to the calculation error. Furthermore, the amended notice in 2006 was published in the very same manner as the initial notice. Well, I take that back. It was ultimately published in the newspaper, but the initial notice that didn't contain the shrinkage rate language was put up onto the Public Utilities Commission website. And this is where we get into the question of what should be the standard for publishing an amended notice. And we look at the administrative code that says it needs to be reasonably calculated to notify affected parties. In this case, the Commission knows that parties like Saguaro are continually looking at these deferred energy filing dockets to see if there's anything they need to take action on. When they've published one notice that makes no reference to the shrinkage rate, they need to realize that parties are going to be relying on that erroneous notice, and that if they're going to be correcting it and providing more information, that they need to do something beyond publishing it in the ordinary fashion, particularly when you consider there are only 58 transportation customers like Southwest. Now, because the notice is deficient from 2005 and 2006, this Court's 1983 Public Service Commission versus Southwest Gas gives clear guidance as to what this Court should do. In that case, the Commission found that where the Utilities Commission took action beyond what was provided for in the notice, that the Commission's orders are void ab initio, that they have no effect. And in that respect, because they have no effect, the retroactive rate making and the filed rate doctrine do not come into play, because those doctrines come into play with the presumption that the Commission's order is valid and lawful. Applies equally to actions initiated by the Commission, like our case here, as well as those initiated by a utility.
Do you want to save the rest of your time for your rebuttal?
Yes, thank you.
Okay, you have about 2 minutes and 47 seconds left for the respondent. Will you be splitting the argument?
Yes, sir. We'd like to split it 12 and 3.
12 for you, 3 for...
May it please the Court, Anna Penrose-Levig for the Public Utilities Commission of Nevada. Before beginning the Commission's two main points in its argument today, I'd like to respond to several of the points made by Saguaro. The first is, Saguaro seems to argue today that shrinkage should not be addressed in a deferred energy proceeding. I believe that's the first time that I've heard that argument made. After Saguaro made that argument, it also stated that Saguaro looks at the deferred energy filings to determine whether the shrinkage rate is changing. And I'm not certain about how those two things go together. The Commission's change that it accepted in 2005, recommended by staff, was not the sea change in methodology that Saguaro argues. Saguaro so grossly oversimplifies this issue as to be really a misstatement of the facts. What the Commission did in 2005 was consistent with the Commission's rate-making authority. Staff suggested, as parties always do in the context of a rate-making docket, change to a number that was in Southwest Gas's application when it filed it. Staff suggested that change because that number needed to be corrected. That number had been incorrect for quite some time. And the reason that it came to staff's attention that that number needed to be corrected was that the cost of gas and other variables in the existing calculation methodology had so increased that when staff was performing an audit of the calculation that was in the application, staff realized that something wasn't matching up. I'd like to note, too, that no one suggests that we should go back and change the rate for all of the other customers that overpaid prior to that correction because of the filed rate doctrine. Saguaro alleges that the Commission's calculation in 2005, the correction to that number, resulted directly in a tenfold increase in its bill. And that also is an oversimplification. The rate in the 2005 docket, if no error had been made by Commission staff and overlooked by the Commission, would have increased fourfold that year, due only to the increases in other variables. The correction that staff recommended to an existing number in the existing calculation resulted in a doubling of the applicable rate for all of Southwest Gas's customers. And with that, the Commission's argument today revolves around two central points. The first is that the order in docket number 08-02008 was a final order in which the Commission effectively denied Saguaro's request for a refund. That order was subject to appeal, and Saguaro did not appeal it. Saguaro should be barred from collaterally attacking the Commission's decision on its petition via the proceeding before you today. The Commission's second point, and it's a related point, because the Commission denied Saguaro's request for a refund in the petition docket, that request was not included in the scope of the Commission's investigation that's before you. It couldn't be. The Commission had already ruled it out. The Commission's order in docket 08-02008 was a final order. In that docket, Saguaro submitted a petition to the Commission requesting the Commission determine how best to address Saguaro's alleged grievance. And Saguaro provided two alternatives. One, reopen Southwest Gas's deferred energy proceedings from 2005 and 2006, or two, initiate an investigation. The Commission's order completely disposed of Saguaro's request for relief by denying in part and granting in part Saguaro's request. The Commission then closed its docket on the petition and opened a separate docket on the investigation. Further proceedings on Saguaro's question and its petition would have continued to address how legally and appropriately to address Saguaro's alleged grievance. Either of these options necessarily had to be conducted in a separate proceeding. For example, if the Commission had determined that its notices in 2005 and 2006 were not sufficient, the Commission would have answered a separate question in the reopening of the 2005 and 2006 dockets, and that question would have been, what should the amount of a refund be? Moving forward, in like manner, when the commission addressed in the investigation the question of how can we proceed prospectively to set the most just and reasonable shrinkage rate, that was a separate question from the question that the commission addressed in the petition. These two options are necessarily mutually exclusive because of the filed rate doctrine itself, which says rates are in full force and effect, and they are lawful until they are changed. And this court has stated, respectfully, that NRS 704.120 prohibits the commission from setting rates any way other than prospectively. Saguaro did suggest one way that could abrogate the filed rate doctrine, and that was if the notices were invalid, the orders were void, and the rates were of no effect at any time. But the commission found, when it adopted general counsel's recommendations made at an open meeting, that the notices were valid. When the commission did that, it closed the door on the possibility of a refund. The commission's order was procedurally sufficient. The commission needed only, the commission's regulations require that it grant, deny, or set for further proceedings any petition filed with it within 60 days of the filing of that petition. The commission here granted in part and denied in part within 60 days. Had the commission set the matter for further proceedings, the same regulation requires that the commission conclude those further proceedings within 120 days. The commission's investigation on this matter took well over 120 days to conclude. It actually took 11 months for the commission to fully gather the information that it needed in order to ensure that going forward, rates were set in a just and reasonable manner. The commission needed only the notices and the applicable law as the substantial evidence underlying its legal determination in that order. The commission's application of the public interest standard in no way makes the commission's order less clear. The commission often applies the public interest standard and is indeed always obligated to act in the public interest. Here, the commission's use of that standard reflected that to reopen the 2005 and 2006 dockets would not be in the public interest because it would violate the filed rate doctrine.
Could you comment on your opponent's reliance on the Southwest Gas 99 Nevada decision?
Yes, Your Honor. This case is not like that case because the change that the commission made in 2005 was a fact-based determination that was part of the commission's rate-making authority. The change the commission made was not a sea change in the methodology. It was the substitution of one number in an existing variable in the existing calculation for another number. That's not a change in the methodology. In Southwest Gas, this court objected to the commission having noticed a rate application and then changing the methodology, the entire way the commission performed rate design. The change the commission made in 2005 was in no way similar to the change that was objected to in that case.
In what respects? I mean, can you, that's the rub of your argument and the issue that divides the two of you, really.
And so I'll explain further. The number that's entered in an existing slot for an existing variable in the calculation that was in Southwest Gas's application when it was submitted is a factor that was in the application when the application was noticed. It's also part of the subject matter of the proceeding. It was in that application when the application was noticed. The question of what the correct number is that should be entered in that slot is the question that the commission answers every time a rate-making application is filed. This is not a change in the overall methodology. This is an exercise of the commission's rate-making authority.
Thank you.
So Saguaro was not precluded from seeking judicial review, as it requests, as it states, because a refund was not at issue in the investigation. The commission did not ignore substantial and uncontroverted evidence. The evidence was not received for the purpose that Saguaro claims. The scope of relevant evidence in an investigation is necessarily broad. Here, the commission was seeking historical context regarding the development of the rate over time in order to best determine how to proceed going forward. The scope of the investigation was determined by the commission when the commission ruled out the possibility of a refund in the petition docket. This constrained the commission, in fact, to only considering the facts relevant to prospective relief. The commission's order at page 1024 of the joint appendix states that the central issue in the investigation is the allocation of cost going forward. Saguaro did renew its refund request in the commission's investigation at page 102 in its testimony. The fact that Saguaro renewed its request and the fact that the commission reiterated its denial of that request in the investigation does not change the scope of the investigation as set by the commission and as dictated by the applicable law. The relevance of the evidence is determined by the presiding officer. And here, the presiding officer stated when she received the notices, for example, and a complete discussion of those notices can be found from 957 to 961 in the transcript from the commission's proceedings. Those are joint appendix numbers, however, 957 to 961. She discussed the notices in the context of admitting them with limited relevance. They were relevant to, and I'm paraphrasing her words here, this is how we got to the rate that we use, the methodology that we use. This was clearly received for historical context. The briefs can also be explained. I'll just finish this last point. The legal brief request was confirm for the commission, for the presiding officer, what the filed rate doctrine says about the relief that we've determined is not allowed. Then clarify what the prohibition against retroactive rate making means for the proceedings before us. We're looking at the prospective determination of the rate. What's prohibited when we're prospectively determining what the rate should be? And if we determine that the commission's calculation error in 2005 harmed Saguaro or other transportation customers, what can we do? And there were two answers to that question. One was, nothing, commission. There's nothing that you can do. NRS 704.120 states you can only set rates prospectively, even if the prior rates were unjust, unreasonable, or unduly discriminatory. The other answer was Saguaro was not harmed by the commission's error in 2005. The commission's error in 2005 resulted in an understatement of the rate. And so where Saguaro, with no change for that variable in the methodology, would have paid that year, a four-fold increase over the rate that was effective the prior year, Saguaro instead paid only 10% more. And so Saguaro saved a tremendous amount of money in shrinkage costs that year. The number in the commission's brief, incidentally, is derived from numbers that are available in the record, and I apologize for not citing to those numbers in the commission's brief. Thank you very much for the opportunity.
Thank you. Mr. Saunders, you have 1 minute and 13 seconds.
May it please the court, Michael Saunders, appearing on behalf of the Attorney General's Bureau of Consumer Protection. Your Honors, Saguaro is correct in one point, that this case is about notice, but I submit that it is about the notice of hearing as it relates to ratepayers. For nothing in the notice of hearing in this case suggested that the commission might order Southwest Gas to issue a refund for services already rendered. Ordering a refund would have constituted that unfair surprise which offends a party's right to due process under the decisions of this court. With the limited time I have remaining, I'd like to address a point that is brought up in Saguaro's reply brief. Saguaro argues that the terms developed, modified, and currently allocated found in the notice of hearing put the parties on notice that the possibility of a refund might be authorized. It is overreaching on the part of Saguaro to argue that these terms somehow put the parties on proper notice of a refund. Because of the lack of proper notice, and additionally because of Saguaro's failure to initiate a proceeding which it would have had the burden of proof of showing a refund, the Bureau was not afforded a full and fair opportunity to defend against the accusation that Southwest Gas owed money to it.
Finish your thought.
Therefore, the Bureau respectfully requests that the Court affirm the decision of the District Court. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you, Mr. Saunders. Carlson, you have 2 minutes and 47 seconds.
Thank you, Your Honor. Just a couple of points. Our briefs certainly explain why we believe the 08-02008 order was not a final order. I think what is most telling is if you look at Volume 6 of the Joint Appendix, page 1045, paragraph 55 of the Commission's order in the docket that's on review says, the Commission finds that Saguaro's request for a refund of all amounts that has paid for shrinkage and it was paying in November of 2006 should be denied. To grant Saguaro's request for a refund in a Commission proceeding would violate the filed rate doctrine and result in retroactive rate making. If the Commission had already made its decision with respect to a refund in 08-02008, why is it spending time in its next order addressing that issue? 08-02008 was not a final order. Going back to the notice, in the 1983 Southwest Gas case, the Commission made changes to rate design that were not requested by Sierra Pacific Power and that were not a part of that notice. In 2005, the Commission did the same thing through its staff, requesting a change in the shrinkage rate calculation methodology, something that hadn't been requested by Southwest, something that was not in the notice.
But the 99 Nevada Southwest Gas decision had a regulation component. The court looked at that and said that was so profound that it amounted to regulatory action rather than fact-finding type activity. And that's the point on which I'm not clear as to how this court should rule. The 1983 Southwest Gas case was actually my first argument in the Nevada Supreme Court, so I'm familiar with that case.
And I understand where you're coming from, Justice Pickering. And I think the key is this is not just about a change in number. Southwest had a number of transportation customers and then regular customers who all participated in paying shrinkage prior to 2005. There were a subset of transportation customers that were exempt from paying any shrinkage charges. Prior to 2005, the non-exempt customers like Saguaro and then regular customers across the system would pay for the exempt customers' shrinkage rate. In 2005, Commission staff said, whoa, we don't think this is right. We want to take that portion that regular customers are paying and put it on the backs of non-exempt customers like Saguaro. That is a dramatic change in how that rate design was accomplished, because prior to 2005, it had been that status quo of regular customers and the non-exempt customers paying for the shrinkage rate.
But you're not arguing that that was tantamount to the promulgation of a regulation that would have required 233B compliance?
We believe it would require that compliance. This isn't just a factual finding. This is changing how the rate design works. We're not just changing a number as to what the rate will be. We're changing who is going to bear the brunt of collecting that, of paying for that shrinkage rate.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Carlson. Thanks to